I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch. My guest is Cause Marte, founder of Conbody, an exercise program that Cause developed while he was in prison for selling drugs. From working out in his 9x6 prison cell, he lost 70 pounds in 6 months. Conbody's located on the Lower East Side of Manhattan and also offers classes online so you can do prison-style workouts from the solitary confinement of your own home. Cause started Conbody in 2014 after he was released from prison. Welcome.
Thank you.
I want to talk about life on the Lower East Side, given that that's all linked to what you're doing now.
Yes.
Your parents are from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
You were born here. What was it like in the late 80s, early 90s?
Okay.
And you were born in 1985.
Yeah, so in growing up in that neighborhood in the Lower East Side, it was drugs everywhere. I mean, I remember seeing dope lines, heroin lines, we call them, where people would line up to buy heroin down the block, and it would be lines of like 20 to 50 people.
What kind of student were you in school?
I was a pretty good student. I was bilingual. I was supposed to be skipped in the third grade, and my mom didn't allow it. I did really, really well in elementary school. Middle school was a different story.
Your parents were both hardworking and did not do drugs.
No.
What did your mom do when you were younger?
When I was younger, my mom worked at a factory on Bleecker Street, and she was like sewing little T-shirts and shorts, and she used to like babysit me under her sewing machine. I remember being a calm kid and just like sitting there and just like playing with my fingers. There was no video games.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford a Game Boy.
And the sound of the machines, do you remember the sound?
Yes, I definitely remember. I was watching a guy that was like ironing all the clothes items, and it was just one guy that was working there, and there was just a whole bunch of ladies like sewing. He would be like steaming everything, like tsh, you know, tsh.
And how about your dad?
He worked as a chef at Tavern of the Green, and then started working in bodegas. That was actually my first job. I worked at a bodega that he ran in front of my building. It was the build downstairs, so I had to wake up in the morning and like open up the store and clean it up, and I started stealing cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. And then one thing led to another. Cigarettes
exactly.
Led to marijuana at age 12. At age 11, you had your first introduction to pot. Did your parents know that you were starting to dabble in this?
They already knew I was going to go down that route. And because all my cousins, we lived in the same floor on 42 Renison Street. Like, my whole family was there. And we would, like, smoke cigarettes in the hallway and, like, you know, throw water balloons off the roof and hang. Our playpen was the fire escape. They found weed when I was 12, and they would tell me, you know, smoke in the building, don't go outside and smoke, if you know, trying to protect me from being arrested.
And then you turned to selling drugs. What was driving you to start this?
I wanted things, and I was hungry. I was always looking to make money as a kid. I would collect baseball cards, sell them. I would, you know, go down the up and down the stairs with a black garbage bag and take all the cans from the neighbors and exchange them in the bodega. And that would be like my lunch money. But I was just hungry. And everybody that was around me had everything. And I wanted that.
So fast forward a few years, by the age of 19, you had become kind of a local kingpin. Is that overstating it?
Not local. It was more of like a tri-state, more regional thing. But it was definitely a delivery service. So I changed the way we sold drugs in the Lower East Side. So I had everybody wear suits and ties, and I made 10,000 business cards. And when the neighborhood started re-gentrifying, I gave it out to like all these like young hipsters, and it was a 24-hour delivery service, and I had over 20 people working for me at that time.
And you were selling now to people who were like analysts at Goldman Sachs, or
exactly,
or, right? I mean,
stockbrokers, judges, lawyers, doctors—you name it.
And you had 7 cell phones at one point.
Yeah, we had 7 cell phones because each phone only held 1,500 numbers, and it was. It got so overwhelming that I started getting like dispatchers, and I had like easel boards where they would write like who's coming in, what's going out, how many people, like keeping stats. We had a marble notebook, like old school bookkeeping style. it was pretty crazy.
By the way, just going back to your parents, you also have two sisters and a brother.
Yeah.
Now, your sisters are ambitious. One was a managing director at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
She now lives in London, and the other is an underwriter for an insurance company.
Yeah.
And your brother, too, running for city council in District 65 of Manhattan.
Yeah, we're hustlers. Yeah. We're trying to take over. We all did well in school. Both my sisters are like valedictorians and my brother as well.
So you had a turning point. You were age 23 and you were caught by the federal authorities. Talk to me about your psychological state at that time. Like, need I ask how you felt about going to jail for 7 years?
I was happy.
How come?
Because it was only 7 years. It was my third felony. I was in and out of jail since I was 13. Went in 10 times. I was supposed to be doing life.
And your parents, do you remember how it was affecting your family?
I mean, they were really affected. And I have a son. I have a 9-year-old son. And I went in when he was 2 years old and came out when he was 6. Seeing that transition with him, and it was sad.
You ended up only serving 4 years ultimately. How come?
Due to a program called SHOCK. It's a military-style boot camp type of deal. It's a 6-month intense hands-on program that you have to work out like 2 hours a day. Strict. You get up, you got to make your bed, brush your teeth, shave, and get dressed in 8 minutes, a minute and a half showers. Like, it's crazy intense.
That seems helpful.
not helpful in the way of what I feel like is abusive, but I did that program 3 times.
So what was the catalyst for your getting into shape?
I got big and started eating unhealthy, and my cholesterol levels were really bad. But I didn't find this out until I went to the doctor in prison in 2009. And they told me that my cholesterol levels were so high that I could die within 5 years. I was sentenced to 7 years, and I did the math, and I said, I'm not going to die in this prison cell. And I began working out, and I lost 70 pounds in 6 months, and then helped over 20 inmates lose over 1,000 pounds combined.
Now, what did you do in that prison cell that caused you to lose 70 pounds in 6 months?
So I took those techniques that I learned from the SHOCK program in 05, 06, and I began using them in that cell. And then I came up with new creative moves because I was there by myself and I was bored, and I just did stuff.
Like what?
There's one exercise I call it up and down. It's like where you sit down on the ground and you get back up, and you sit down on the ground and you get back up. It's a natural movement, but people don't really see the effects. It's really hard to sit down and get back up at high repetitive amount of times, a couple hundred times.
What else?
So I did like push-ups, dips off of my side of my bed. I held my mattress and did step-ups on the side with the bed. Shoulder presses with my pillow, and just getting creative because you have nothing to do and you was bored.
Your motivation was your own physical health because you had been told that you might die in 5 years. And also there's a culture of exercise a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you have the time to do it, and a lot of guys in the prison yard, they're like, yeah, I'm going to get out because I'm going to get these girls. You don't want to go in there and just waste your time and like be fat and lazy and then come out and look in the same and you won't be able to find a girl.
Even though your prison sentence was shortened from 7 years to 4 years, you spent a month in solitary confinement because you had an altercation with a guard?
Yes.
And then you kind of had an epiphany moment while you were there.
Yeah.
But why were you there?
Why was I there? I was called down to the medical unit. This officer places me on the wall to search me. He starts searching me and manhandling me in the wrong ways. I moved a little bit. He smacked me in the back of my head really hard, which made me drop down to the ground. And I stood up and I turned around on him. 10 officers, about a dozen officers came to the scene. They beat the crap out of me. They threw me in solitary. I ended up doing an extra year because of that situation.
But isn't this illegal? Like, you know, for doing what? You didn't do anything.
When I got to that cell, I was like banging my head in the wall because I was like, I'm coming home. I told my son that I was coming home in 2 months, and I couldn't see my son. And And I was devastated because I was like, I didn't do anything wrong.
You wrote a letter to your family.
Yeah, so out of like desperation, I sat down at this little desk that you have in your cell, and I began writing a letter asking for help. I enclosed this letter, and when I enclosed it, I realized I didn't have a stamp to send it out with. A couple days later, my sister writes me. She tells me to read Psalm 91 from the Bible. All I had in my cell was a Bible that I never picked up, and as soon as I started reading it, a stamp fell out of my Bible. And it was a stamp that I needed to send out this letter with. Right in that instant moment, or that stupidity that I used to think, all went out the door. I felt like I was affecting so many people. Mm-hmm. And I was creating this whole web of destruction, and I needed to, you know, create a web of positivity. I felt like this was my calling. And my whole idea was like starting a prison-style boot camp, doing training the same way we trained in the prison yard. Mm-hmm. And then hiring formerly incarcerated people to teach the fitness classes.
So you get out of prison, but you don't start Khan Body right away. You tried to find other jobs prior. What were some of those jobs that you had?
So I just kept applying for jobs. I kept getting the door slammed in my face. Eventually, I found a job off the books. My uncle works at this hotel, and I was just scrubbing toilets there. I was grateful. I was not making a lot of money, but I was out, and I could eat, you know, and I could sleep, and I could, like, use the bathroom whenever I want to, you know.
While you were working with your uncle at this hotel, and you were exercising in the park.
Yeah, I was working out by myself, and I was going up to random people, and I used the same marketing tactics that I used while I was selling drugs. I made business cards, and I started going up to girls with yoga pants. I tell them, like, I see that you work out, you know, you should come work out with me. I run Khan Body as a prison-style boot camp derived from my prison experience, where I lost 70 pounds in 6 months in a prison cell, and then I helped over 20 inmates, who was over 1,000 pounds combined. I could get you ass that, excuse my language, that prison body you've always desired.
And did they come, or were they kind of scared off by that?
Some just laughed. Out of 1,000, maybe like 5 or 10, you know. So it took a while.
Wasn't there some story you were working out and some guy passed you and said, "Can I join?" And you said, "Yeah, for $200.
I was doing pull-up bar training in the morning, and I had a group of about like 6-7 people out there. He comes like running towards the side and jumps on this pull-up bar that I made. There's no pull-up bar in the park. I took this like broken piece pipe off the ground and stuck it between fences and was doing pull-up bar training there. And when he jumped on it, I was like, "Yo, that's my bar. You have to pay me for that." And he was like, "Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I don't mean to disrespect." Then I told him, like, "Do you want to join?" And he was like, "How much is it?" And I was like, I didn't really have like a pricing, you know, strategy or whatever, and I told him $200, and we went to the ATM. I like quickly closed the deal.
So how did it become more, should I say, institutionalized?
Yeah.
How did it go from stalking people in the park to an actual thing?
It was getting cold, and I needed a place to start doing it inside, so I started renting out a studio, and then it got really overcrowded. People, the word of mouth was just getting out there. I needed help with other people, and the people that helped me were like formerly incarcerated people that I know, and I got them involved quickly.
You won a business plan competition. How did you team up with, who was it?
I won a business plan competition through Defy Ventures. So Defy Ventures that believes that illegal entrepreneurs could become legal entrepreneurs. And they have like these Shark Tank competitions. I won like 10 grand from them. And that's the capital that I used to start up this company. Mm-hmm. And then I started winning multiple competitions. I joined this like YPO competition that Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank was like actually hosting, and I won that, and then I won and started raising more money, Kickstarters and all this other stuff.
I've heard you say that you transferred your hustle. You hustled to sell drugs, and then where had you come up with that term? I like it.
Well, transform your hustle. That's like that. That's like the Defy Ventures like tagline.
Transform your hustle.
Yeah.
How did selling drugs kind of help you with what you're doing now?
Definitely made me not scared to ask. Going up to random people and just like stopping them and pitching them and like continuously doing it was something that I did. I think the only difference is that you have to pay taxes.
Was there one person or one like magazine piece that really helped to escalate Conbody? Were there any turning points?
There was a small NPR piece that was done like in 2014 when I first like started in the studios, and people started hitting me up out of nowhere. From there, a TED Talk. And from there, like, just a whole bunch of magazines and articles started spiraling. We've been featured in over 200 publications now.
What is the nature of your clients?
So it's usually, like, 25 to 35-year-old young professional woman. We use no equipment. And I feel like equipment really intimidates females sometimes, and that's what they tell me.
Also, it's 30-minute classes. That helps.
Yes, 30-minute classes that you will be taking too, Jessica.
If you're my teacher, I'll do
yes.
it. In addition to having this studio on the Lower East Side, you're now reaching people in other cities and countries because
yes.
you have an online platform where you're streaming workouts. What's an example of some people taking these online classes? Where are they living?
So I have people from like everywhere, like middle America, moms, kids, college students. We got people from Korea, China, Hong Kong, Japan, South Africa, a lot of people from like London, Italy, France, people from Turkey. But it's just been like really catching on with like the whole world.
Was there one or two people that were so helpful to you in getting this off the ground?
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of people, especially my ex-girlfriend, Jennifer Shaw. She's, like, really intelligent, taught me a lot about branding, writing emails, and reconstructing the business properly.
Is she the mother of your son?
No. I actually met this girlfriend on Tinder when I came home.
Do you exercise every day?
I don't exercise every single day, but I really exercise frequently, at least like 4 to 5 times a week. I just ran the Manhattan Bridge before I got here.
And what'd you eat?
I ate corned beef hash, home fries, and boiled eggs from Cup and Saucer on Canal and Eldridge.
You got a huge smile on your face.
It's my favorite spot. You know, John and Nick, they've been there since I was born.
When you walk the streets of the Lower East Side now versus, the late 1980s, 90s, how do you feel walking the same streets and having it look? Well, how would you define how it looks and feels?
Back in the day, it was more of a community and more dangerous. Now it's like less of a community but safer.
So no heroin lines?
No.
Be
coffee
now.
And there's no more kids. There's like poodles. You know, I remember as a kid running in the park at late night of the hours at 5, 6 years old, and somebody's watching me in the street and nobody cared. I miss summers where I was opening up the fire hydrant and like, you know, cleaning cars and making a few dollars and just still having fun on the streets. You know, nobody hangs around in corners anymore.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Cos Marte, founder of Conbody. If you would like to learn more about the show, please visit our website at fromscratchradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at Jess G. Harris or find us on Facebook. I'm Jessica Harris. This is From Scratch.